This broadcast contains subject matter that may offend liberal snowflakes. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have a stocked broadcast today. I mean, line to line, absolutely jam-packed guests and information. Before I get to all that, we need to address something that is the overarching issue that we've talked about before, and it's one of the headlines of today's show. The plan to end humanity in the digital age revealed. Now, what does that mean? Well, I've got a story here. Men in their 30s hit by impotence epidemic as half suffer erectile dysfunction. So that's one angle. Maybe that comes from a psychological thing. Maybe that comes from all the pornography. I'm not really sure. But you also have an epidemic of sperm counts being very low and sperm swimming very slow. So you've got now this huge issue where men can't even reproduce effectively. But what's around the corner? Well, with the other chemicals in the food and water combined with the 5G, what are you going to see happening? Well, you're going to see more impotence from men. Then you're going to see eggs, female eggs, that also cannot be penetrated by a sperm. You've already got that going on in a reaction to all the radio waves bouncing in and out of our bodies. Female eggs harden to protect themselves from that and then make sperm impenetrable. So this is one issue in the overarching issue facing humanity, aside from all the psychological issues, which we'll get to in a second. So where does this go? Well, if men and women can't reproduce anymore, that's the end of humanity. Well, what's the solution then? Okay, upload your brain to the digital cloud. Upload your consciousness to the digital reality. That is the plan. That is where we're going. Do you want that? Do you not want that? Can we at least have a public debate on it? But where does it go? And then you see this story today. Oldest living person ever is unhappy and wishes she had died young. Now, I don't know why this person is unhappy. I feel like I'd love to live to the age of 128 unless I was, you know, on life support or something. But if I could walk around and live and breathe and socialize and see my grandkids and stuff, I think that'd be amazing. But here's the story to me. People are not meant to live forever. Humans are not meant to live forever. And if you upload your consciousness to some cloud, you'll live forever in ultimate torture. That's what I believe that is total torture. And I just can't even believe that this is the direction we're headed in. And they're going to say the only chance you have to live now is to update your consciousness to the digital cloud. You're a human. You cannot live anymore. And so then it'll reach a point, and this is like way down the road, where there won't even be humans anymore, and human beings will be a conspiracy theory. They never even existed. So that's where we're heading. In the meantime, look at the psychological damage you have to humans on Earth when a woman goes into a coffee shop, you won't believe this, and literally, well, I don't even want to say it, but drops a deuce right on the floor of a coffee shop because she's unhappy with the service I guess she doesn't receive. Look at this unbelievable, stunning video of a whacked out human being, clearly psycho, going into a coffee shop and doing the dirty right there on the floor. So here she is standing at the corner or at the counter, gets into some sort of verbal altercation, arguing with the barista or whoever it is running the register there, screaming, shouting, pointing, clearly upset. Why? I don't know. Now she grabs the napkins and she's threatening to do something, and there she goes. Now she drops her drawers right there on the floor of a Tim Hortons coffee and now pops a squat, and there you go. Now that's a censored image, but that actually happened. I mean, at least she has the common courtesy to wipe her butt. And then she throws it on the ground. So that's what we're dealing with now in humanity. So either become that or upload your brain to a digital cloud. Yeah, I'll pass. time to be alive. History unfolding every day. And most of the population of Earth is missing it. Specifically here in America, where we have access to this information, we have access to this enlightenment, we have access to be a part of the Third Great Awakening, and most Americans choose to pass it up. Now, huge news, huge show today. Roger Stone's about to come on and take your phone calls for the first hour. You're not going to want to miss that. 888-201-2244. Roger Stone takes your phone calls in the first hour of the War Room today. 888-201-2244. Tyler Nixon will join us in the first hour. Lucian Wintrich will be with me from the Gateway Pundit in the second hour. Brandon Tatum will be with me as well in the second hour. And then our own reporter Jake Lloyd joins me in studio in the third hour. And then I'm going to try to crunch through the rest of the news in what we have left. So that's what you can expect from today's show. Now, the big story is Facebook and Twitter announcing their new plan for censorship. Now, they have all of these buzzwords to kind of sugar paint it. They say they want to serve healthy conversation. That's what the Twitter blog says today. They want to stop hate speech. Well, how come it seems to be conservatives, Trump supporters, and Christians that are the ones that are being censored, and you cannot compile a list of leftists or liberals or Trump haters or even people that give death threats to Trump that get censored on social media? So you've got that whole dynamic. But Roger, you've actually been on the receiving end of this. You're actually in litigation fighting this right now. It seems to me that more people are waking up to the censorship on social media, but in response to that, the social media giants are actually doubling down, and they're saying their response to the censorship is more censorship, Roger. This is an amazing event.
Oh, and you're exactly right. Look, it was shocking to me when I took the Infowars.com buy link for my new book, Stone's Rules, and then I went to Facebook, as I have always done, and I paid a modest paid promotion post. And it was immediately rejected because the link was deemed to be inappropriate content. There's nothing obscene or wrong with that content. It doesn't violate any of their guidelines. They just won't link anything associated to InfoWars. We also learned, shockingly, that as of the 24th of May, you will no longer be able to select InfoWars followers or Prison Planet followers or Alex Jones followers in their matrix of advertising options. They're actually turning down money in order to censor us. It is not incidental that all of this is going on while the special counsel moves into high gear. This is precisely the time that they want to take away our voice, at the time that the president needs our support and our defense at the greatest single time. So this is fraught with danger. This is the single greatest threat to our democracy. This is the single greatest fight we are engaged in, because we cannot fight out the immigration issue or the issue of American sovereignty or the trade issue or the vaccination issue or any of the issues that we spearhead here at InfoWars if we have no voice, if our First Amendment rights are stripped from us. And that is exactly what the tech left has in mind. People think we're kidding. They think it's a joke and that we're overreacting. You know, Owen, that that's not the case.
Well, see, and you just broke it down so clairvoyantly, and I don't think people really understand the dimensions of this. It's not just that they want to censor us. I mean, yes, we're up here saying, hey, look, they're censoring us. This is an attack on our free speech. This is an attack on our right to be in the free market. But that's just one dimension. This is a multidimensional issue, Roger, where, like you're saying, now most public debate happens on these social media platforms. Whether we like it or not, that's the truth of the issue. So if they start to censor free speech or censor one side of the issue, well, now all of a sudden they're controlling the narrative and there is no public debate. So instead of people being able to go onto Facebook, go onto Twitter, or go onto social media and type in a trending topic or look at comments and, you know, try to form an opinion on your own, or just see both sides of the issue. Maybe they already have their opinion set in stone, but still, to see both sides of the issue, that's what free speech is all about. Well, they're just totally stomping that out now. And what they want to do in the very near future is just totally dominate the debate by ending debate, totally dominate the narrative by controlling the narrative. So now if you put something out on social media that goes against the narrative, they just wipe it from social media, and half the people, or even more of the people that are on that platform, don't even realize it's going on. Don't even realize that here they are not even seeing a full spectrum of speech and idea, because social media giants are controlling you and putting you into a think tank bubble where you only get the approved content that they decide. I mean, this is so Orwellian, it's almost impossible to actually describe to people.
Well, and as you have experienced at InfoWars, and probably personally, when you post last year during the election at InfoWars, videos and media reports, news reports, would get hundreds of thousands, in some cases, millions of follows. I have seen videos by the great Paul Joseph Watson that had literally millions of opens disappear overnight, just into the ether, gone, history. This is the wholesale censorship of our First Amendment rights. We scare the crap out of the globalists. They are petrified because we're the cutting edge. We're the tip of the spear, and we are spurring the resistance. They want to silence us as a precursor to strip us of our Second Amendment rights and then remove the president of the United States, who was duly elected. This is not only just about the 2018 and 2020 election. Their game plan is far more immediate than that. Nothing less than a complete bogus coup d'etat to remove Donald Trump. The sooner the president wakes up to the antitrust and monopolistic practices of the tech left and ends this war of censorship, the safer his presidency will be, the better his prospects will be for the 2018 and 2020 election. The president must wake up and understand what is going on here. I find it troubling that Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump, good people, but dining with the heads of Google while Google is turning around and strangling the rank and file Trump supporter.
Well, and here's what people can do if you're wondering what to do out there to combat this. A, now is the time. We have a window before they bring on the full-out onslaught of censorship, the full-out attack on free speech. Go on to Twitter, go on to Facebook, go on to these social media platforms, share our videos, share links to our live broadcast, share links to Roger Stone's new book, share link to the InfoWarsStore.com. So literally overload the weapon system right now with the truth, overload the weapon system, overload the social media platform right now with our data, with our information, with our links now before they censor it. And then some people will have this weird thing click in their head. They're like, hey, I saw InfoWars popping up every day on my newsfeed. Now all of a sudden it's gone. Huh, I'm going to go search for that and see why it's gone. And then they'll find out how it's being censored. And then naturally, that human instinct of defiance will kick in and they'll want InfoWars even more. So now is the time. Share our links, share our broadcast, tell friends and family about us before they try to erase us from the internet. And in the process, we're able to expand and provide more content and get more hosts that you might find more appealing. Maybe you don't like my loud, yelling at you, obnoxious style. Maybe you like a David Nye style that's more controlled, more like a sniper who picks out his target and then just puts one bullet right through the head. So we have different personalities for different tastes, and we're trying to deliver more, and it's all possible at InfoWarsStore.com. So while we're facing this onslaught on attack on us, understand, the only reason why Twitter and Facebook are putting these new policies out is to censor us. You need to understand that this is literally an attack on us. This is an attack on you. Support us at InfoWarsStore.com. Nothing pisses them off more than you shopping at InfoWarsStore.com, because they cannot silence your right to vote with your dollar at InfoWarsStore.com. It drives them crazy.
The War Room. InfoWars.com/show.
Welcome back. You're at Freedom Command Central. That's right. It's the War Room with your co-hosts, Roger Stone and Owen Schroyer. Owen Schroyer turned out in an extraordinary American flag necktie today. I must say, Owen, that is a tasty piece of haberdashery. We are going to move to the phones. I find every time we take phone calls from InfoWarriors, I get an influx of emails asking us to do it more. We really value the dialogue we have, so let's go to our first call. For those who want to get in the queue, that number, 888-201-2244. That's 888-201-2244. Let's go first to Larry in Minneapolis. Larry, you're on the War Room.
Thank you so much, Roger, and I'm going to refer to you as my brother, and to Alex, and to Owen, and to Darren, and David, and all of my brothers and sisters there at InfoWars. I've had the opportunity multiple times to actually have been interviewed on InfoWars, and I just want to encourage you, Mr. Stone, my brother. We know that they are going, by they, what do I mean by that? I mean specifically the deep state. I mean specifically the insane, maniacal, so-called leftist, so-called progressives, they have no choice but to intensify their absurd and despicable attacks upon you, all of us, upon your family. And I just wish you strength, and I wish all of us strength. Carry on, and we are going to win. As they say, as we say at InfoWars, the best answer to 1984, 17. 76. All power to the people. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Owen. Thank you, InfoWars. We must support you. Thank you.
Well, Larry, if you're still there, in case our audience isn't aware, this is Larry Pinkney, a former Black Panther. Are you still with us, Larry?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I wanted to ask you a question. Obviously, you are very experienced and you were part of Black activism before. I just wanted to ask you a question in what you're seeing from some of the Black activism today, a specific example where you have a guy, Chadwick Boseman, the Black Panther, go do the Wakanda Forever salute at a Howard graduation. Now, okay, maybe it's lighthearted, maybe it's joking, but I look at that and I kind of see that as a sad thing where you have Black people virtue signaling to a made-up country in Africa that doesn't even exist. Instead of signaling something that's pro-America, even a Black Panther salute, something that originated in America where they get all of their rights and prosperity. I mean, I was just curious, what did you think about that? Had you heard about that?
Of course I have. And my response to that is, and I can say this on a number, though not all, but a number of other of the original, and I repeat, original Black Panther Party, not so-called new Black Panther Party. We are an outrage. Stop dealing with mythology and deal with reality. We have a constitution in this country. We have a Bill of Rights. We have those things. We don't need to turn to mythology. Let's turn to our own country. Let's build this country. Let's make it even greater. Of course we have our faults. I don't know a key country that doesn't have faults. But America, the United States, is where we are, and it must come first. So as far as those folks who want to deal with mythology, well, you know, let them go read fairy tale. This is not a fairy tale. This is a real life struggle, and people's lives are being ruined as what's being happening with the Mueller, which is not an investigation. It's a pure witch hunt. Why Roger and Alex and InfoWars and so many people are being caught up in this. No, not interested in mythology. Want to deal with reality. Want to make our country even greater.
Thank you so much for calling in today, Larry Pinkney, original member of the real Black Panther Party. Powerful words today on the War Room. Thank you so much, Larry. Let's jump out to another call for Roger Stone here on the War Room. We have Sam in Texas. Go ahead, Sam. You're on the air with Roger Stone.
Hi, Roger. It's my first time on with you, and I wanted to ask you about the Dr. Larry Nassar case that hit the news again today as he was asked by a $500 million statement Penn State was. How do we keep that from getting out of the public consciousness again?
I had an audio problem. I apologize. Can you repeat the question? We had a snafu there.
I wanted to ask you about the news today about Dr. Larry Nassar. I also read your book, by the way. It's excellent. I enjoyed it immensely. And perhaps you'll autograph my copy someday, and we can have a back and forth on the fashion considerations of the concealed carry lifestyle.
I would be honored to sign a book for you. I have not had a chance to read this story. Owen, do you have any thoughts on the Larry Nassar scandal?
Well, I haven't really delved too deep into the latest development, which is the $500 million settlement that was just, I guess, processed in Michigan. You know, my background thoughts to this have always kind of been a mystery as to how something like this goes on. You know, I'm not going to sit here and deny that it went on. It always is the first thing that comes to my head is how can this type of abuse be so rampant and so systematic in a Olympics program, in the United States Olympics program, and it takes years for it to be discovered, and then all of a sudden comes forward at once? I mean, it's always been a mystery to me how that stuff remains dormant for so long. I mean, that has always been the craziest part about it to me. And does it tell you that this is the culture in some of these institutions that we're fighting back against? Was there something else going on? I don't know. It's very strange. Sam, actually, Pastor Sam, thank you for calling in. I'm not sure. Did you have any thoughts on that you wanted to get out? Looks like we lost Pastor Sam. All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Sam. We've got another call. Go ahead, Roger.
Before we go there, Owen, and I spoke about this on the Alex Jones show. Today, there's a terrific piece at Art Voice that finally correctly exposes my role in exposing the NXIVM sex cult in upstate New York. What's extraordinary about that particular cult that I detected something was not right about in the brief 2 months in which I worked for them as a consultant, even though I saw no evidence of sexual abuse, I did detect financial impropriety. There's a detailed story about my role as a source in the NXIVM takedown. But what's most interesting is there were reports to law enforcement and to state authorities over a number of years about the abuses of this cult, and they were systematically ignored. It was not until the crusading journalist Frank Parlato went to the New York Times with evidence of actual branding of women inside the sex cult that he busted this story wide open. Today, he reveals that I was one of his original sources, that I was the first person who told them something was not right about this group shortly after he was originally retained as a public relations man. There you had pedophilia and sex abuse right under the noses of the authorities, and nothing was done until we know that Frank Parlato at Art Voice busted this story wide open.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show. The left promises to launch a communist revolution. We promise to stand in their way. This is The War Room with Owen Schroyer and Roger Stone. Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
Well, I'll tell you what, I am no fan of Bill de Blasio. In fact, I think the guy is a total lowlife and an awful mayor. But even a broken clock is right twice a day. This is the story. Manhattan DA says he'll stop prosecuting pot possession. Now, this is part of de Blasio saying they're going to overhaul its marijuana enforcement policies in the next month. De Blasio said, I quote, we must and will end unnecessary arrest and end disparity in enforcement. So they'll paint it as a tackling racism issue. But I think that this is a more broader issue that they may not even realizing they're helping with, which is the war on drugs. Now, we the people could nullify the war on drugs via the jury via our power to jury nullification. But if you've now got DAs and other members of the justice apparatus that want to do something about this, stopping the prosecution of pot possession is one way to do this. Obviously, guys, we're about states' rights for whether it be marijuana being legal, decriminalized, whatever it is. We want to have medicine be readily available that use marijuana and cannabinoids available to the people. So this could be one step in the right direction from the legal system. I wanted to get Tyler Nixon and Roger Stone's take on this before we moved on. Let's bring Tyler in for the first time in the war room today. What do you think about this being a legal precedent moving forward where the Justice Department or just individual entities within the legal apparatus kind of do little things like this to stop the war on drugs?
Well, it's good to be with you guys as always. You know, I'm personally for any practical measures that can de-escalate the war on drugs, that can take down and stop or abate the persecution and prosecution of people for these crimes. They're not even crimes, really. They're offenses. They're invented. They're not malum per se crimes. They're not evil or bad on their face. They're just, you know, the state. Basically, when you get down to it, the drug war and any drug prohibition crime comes down to disobedience of the state. That's what you're being punished for. You're being punished for disobeying dictates that you will not possess certain substances, you know, not all. That being said, you know, it's a positive move, I think, but ultimately it's corrosive, just as the drug war has been corrosive to the rule of law. And Owen, you were spot on yesterday with your point. It's a point I've been making for years that, you know, we basically have a situation where the disrespect for law enforcement, the disrespect for law very much comes from the drug war. You know, people don't respect the drug laws because they see around them, for example, with marijuana, with cannabis, that, look, this is not what the government would have us believe in terms of harm, in terms of what, you know, the draconian measures that need to be undertaken or that have been undertaken to interdict it. So you create a disrespect for the rule of law. You create tension between, you know, law enforcement officers and agents and communities, especially inner city communities, especially, you know, black communities, you know, communities of color that have been targeted and have, you know, whether it's purposeful or not, it's a de facto situation that they have suffered the brunt of this. I would hope that, you know, the legislators would get it in gear. I mean, 90% of the country plus supports medical marijuana, and it's approaching 65, 66% with more than half of the Republican Party now, which is unprecedented, supporting decriminalization or legalization, whatever you want to call it. I call it the end of prohibition, deprohibition of whatever you want to use it for, whether it be recreational, medical, or otherwise. That's where we need to do that. You know, that's where the rubber needs to meet the road. But I do get with prosecutors who don't want, you know, who want to make the prosecutorial discretion. But ultimately, it is corrosive to the rule of law and to, you know, the fact that we should have equal application of the law, but we need to have good laws to apply.
So kind of a dangerous precedent that the DA will decide when or when he won't enforce the law, but good on the sense that, hey, look, this has been an abuse against the American people using the war on drugs against them. We need to do something to stop it. Roger, you've been an advocate for states' rights, specifically for medical marijuana. What's your take on this?
Well, the truth is that in New York City, 86% of the marijuana possession arrests fall on people who are either African American or Hispanic. That's outrageous. We need to call this what it is: racist. If you're a rich white kid, you can get away with murder. But if you're poor and you are black or Hispanic, you're going to get busted for a simple possession. This is a nonviolent crime. Now, the district attorneys are not saying that they will ignore the law. What they're saying is in some instances they will issue a summons rather than arresting people. That's a step in the right direction. But New York State needs to decriminalize marijuana entirely. Ironically, people can be prosecuted in New York City for possession, which isn't even a crime in 29 other states. It is time for real drug law reform in the Empire State as well. Those who want to help the fight for reform and for legalized cannabis can go to the uscannabiscoalition.com. That's uscannabiscoalition.com, where both Tyler Nixon and I are members of the advisory committee, along with Judge Andrew Napolitano and Judge, Bill Maher from HBO's Real Time, Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida, and other luminaries who support the fight for legal cannabis.
Let's retreat to a topic we discussed earlier, Roger, and that is the outright censorship and attack on free speech happening right now on social media, specifically Twitter, Facebook, of course, extending to Google and YouTube. And let's bring Tyler into this conversation. Tyler, I view this as overall an attack on free speech and the First Amendment, what social media is doing, but specifically a response to us being so successful. They don't know what to do about InfoWars reaching such a massive audience, so now they're rigging up social media giants in order to censor us from getting out there.
Yeah, it's truly frightening, Owen. And you know, I posted a tweet just on that platform just yesterday saying that I think, you know, that Facebook, Twitter, this is one of the biggest and most diabolical bait and switches ever perpetrated on a population in history. You know, 2008, it was, join Twitter, sign up for Twitter, expand your network, share your views. Now it's like, get in line with a leftist claptrap. Don't, you know, share any type of controversial views outside of the leftist norm of the radical left's idea of what is acceptable speech, or you'll be deleted entirely, your network's expunged, and you'll be, you know, blotted from the face of the earth as far as they're concerned, as they did with Roger. I think it's really disgusting and it's chilling and it's scary. However, the existence, frankly, of InfoWarriors, I think the existence of creative people, creative talent out there, so many good people, you know, they're going to be their own undoing in the end. I think they are drunk on their own power that they have been flexing for the last several years. I think they've been catalyzed somewhat to overreach by the election of Donald Trump and by the success of InfoWars and of other alternative media and alternative platforms. And, you know, the problem is they think that they're somehow something special. They're not. You know, I mean, yes, they've suckered everybody in to sign up for years. But, you know, Facebook is melting down. I personally have to force myself now to go onto Facebook. You know, you go through a phase, I think everybody does, where, hey, this is great. This is cool. I'm in touch with people. I get to communicate. You know, but it grows old, and especially when you realize that behind the scenes they're censoring people, they're manipulating you, and we know about the algorithms and so forth. I think that the ingenuity of humanity, of humankind, of good people will ultimately work this out and will find means of expression, because it all comes down to just electrons, pushing electrons and the ability, frankly, to send a signal and set up. I mean, if it's easy as setting up a website, frankly. There's nothing special about Twitter. It's just that people have basically, again, been suckered into it. And I think I think there'll be a brighter future that will come out of it. It's sort of the dialectic of history. We'll see a greater synthesis in the end.
Well, and there's an overall push to those media platforms on television media, which is the dominant media. So now when you see someone on TV you like, or you see some coverage, what does it do? It plugs their Twitter, it plugs their Facebook, it plugs their YouTube. So they send all the traffic there, then create an Overton window or a censored version of reality so that its users don't see the entire world.
War Room. InfoWars.com/show.
So, the Mueller probe is totally collapsing, imploding, exploding, all of it. And what are they going to do to try to put Humpty Dumpty back together again? Well, one tactic that they continue to use is to try to lump a bunch of people together and then demonize them and paint the picture that they're the criminals, they're the conspirators, they're the traitors against America, even though it's everyone involved in the Mueller probe, it's everyone involved from the Obama administration, it's everyone involved in cheating the Democrats to getting Hillary Clinton the nomination. Those are the real criminals. Those are the real traitors, but they try to cast people like Roger Stone and Richard Gates as the traitors, even though they're the true patriots here. So, Roger, as you're seeing this narrative play out and the Mueller probe totally destroy itself, yet they try to prop it up by attacking you as a Russian conspirator, where does this go next? I mean, nothing is sticking here.
Yeah, it's somewhat Kafka-esque. I must say, Owen, only minutes ago, Reuters broke a story that a internet consultant by the name of Jason Sullivan, who I retained for a couple months to for various projects, has been subpoenaed before the grand jury on Thursday. Now, he did have access to my Twitter feed. He had my Twitter passcode. On the other hand, anything that would be of interest to the special prosecutor has already been turned over to the House Intelligence Committee. If they're looking for some secret traffic with WikiLeaks or the Russians or Guccifer 2.0, they won't find it because it does not exist. Mr. Sullivan's a very bright fellow. He's got some innovative programs. I was a little disappointed that we didn't quite have the reach that I was hoping for, but I am perplexed as to why they're calling him in front of the grand jury. This material has been thoroughly vetted, and anything of interest was already turned over. So this is part and parcel, and this story is symptomatic of the big lie technique that they are now focused on Roger Stone. Let's review this. Oh, it's because he said he had dinner with Julian Assange, except for I proved that I didn't. Oh, it's because he received allegedly hacked emails from the Russians and passed it on to WikiLeaks. Well, I'm not even sure the DNC was hacked, but whether they were or whether they weren't, I never received anything from the Russians or anyone else and passed anything on to Donald Trump or the Trump campaign. Now, I know it's tedious to hear these denials, but the problem with the fake news media is that they act as if they have never heard this before. They act as if you have never denied this before. I'm highly confident that after all of this examined, they will find no evidence of Russian collusion or any other inappropriate activity.
Well, Tyler, I look at a situation like this, and 17th century justice would be the people probably involved in the illegal spying and this Mueller probe would probably hang from the highest tree. But that's 17th century justice. We're in the 21st century now, so let's not be so inhumane. What needs to happen? What does the Justice Department need to do, not just to stop this Mueller probe, but I think also arrest people involved to make sure something like this doesn't happen again?
You know, there's the ideal, what we want to happen, and what's actually going to happen. Unfortunately, you know, you're talking about a network of people who control the enforcement of law. And you have a Robert Mueller who's, you know, the darling of the D.C. establishment. You know, he can't get enough pats on the back from the likes of Lindsey Graham and, you know, all the people who are supposed to be overseeing this type of thing, who are supposed to be reining in this type of abuse, who simply just don't want to break their institutional lock that they have on the ability to conduct this kind of garbage, whether it be, you know, congressional witch hunt oversight hearings or an actual special counsel. I mean, this, I thought about this yesterday, and it's a little disturbing, because who do you turn to? I mean, they've got the president hamstrung, where his subordinate, this special counsel, he can't touch him. His attorney general has recused himself. He's got this rogue Rosenstein guy who should have been fired the minute that he talked about extortion in regard to congressional requests for documents that they've been dragging their feet and turning over with this Clinton email investigation. You know, with regard to Roger, for example, I honestly feel like they got into him last, and you'd think that if you listen to the likes of Ari Melber and the other talking head leftist hacks who pose as journalists on CNN, MSNBC, whatever, you know, you'd think, well, they're saving him for last because he's the big mullah, you know, he's the big enchilada that they're going to get. You know, frankly, he's last because they don't have anything on him, because they haven't been able to find anything on him. So they're literally chasing down every last single possible lead. And I think it comes down to, and Roger, you know, this would be the first time you're hearing this, I honestly think that it comes down to Mueller and his team not wanting to leave excuse the pun, any stone unturned. I think they are interviewing everybody so they could say, look, we were as thorough as possible and we didn't find anything because there was nothing to find. You know, I would think that there's an iota of integrity left, that they're not actually just going to set out to frame you outright. Now, look, you got somebody like Cohen, you have people who are involved maybe in some questionable things. They might be able to cook up a charge on them, but in your case, there's just absolutely nothing. When you pull back and use a rational mind, you know, look through the eyes of a sane person, and you look at, for example, this Twitter, the Podesta tweet. This is insanity. I mean, who the hell? This is Adam Schiff's deranged partisan delusions that have come to life and been seized upon out of, say, 20,000 tweets that you did. This random offhanded thing. A month out from when the Podesta emails were leaked, and by the way, they were not hacked. John Podesta was such an idiot that he actually clicked on a spear phishing link and handed his information over. Frankly, his password was the word password. The man was an incompetent boob, and he handed over his information to them. So, you know, the idea that there's this hack and this nefarious plot, you know, I've known you long enough, Roger. You weren't involved in this crap. And I'm tired of hearing it, frankly. I'm tired of you having to defend yourself and repeat yourself. I mean, I watched you on Chris Cuomo last Monday. A year before that, 14 months before that, you were on with Isikoff, this guy Isikoff from Yahoo. Same questions, literally almost the exact same answers. You're right, it's tedious. I guess you have to go through the motions of it. I wouldn't be concerned in your case, Roger. I think they're just trying to run down all the different leads and all the possible avenues so they can say in the end, look, we were thorough, we didn't find anything. And I think you don't have anything to be concerned about. Go ahead.
It's extraordinary, these stories broken by CNBC and MSNBC saying that my relationship with Rick Gates was a new focus. Now, I barely know Rick Gates. But we've identified one dinner at which we were together. I know exactly who was at this meeting. Michael Caputo of the Trump campaign, John Hagerty of the Trump campaign, myself, and Steve Malzberg, then of Newsmax Media. And there was no discussion of Julian Assange or WikiLeaks or anything else inappropriate. The one person who joined that meeting late, who came in the stead of Paul Manafort, was Rick Gates. So therefore, the question one has to ask is, who alleged that there was a discussion of WikiLeaks or WikiLeaks documents? Everyone else at that dinner denies hearing anything of the kind. Could Mr. Gates have said this? We can call this Gates-gate, nothing to it. But that is the perfect example of a kind of fake news media story put forward by Ari Melber, who so far has denied my challenge to come here on InfoWars for 1 hour, mano a mano, and debate this out. Instead of smearing me when you could bring on a turkey like Nick Ackerman, come here or bring Ackerman. Tyler Nixon will be my second, and we will be happy to go head to head. There he is, the real Ari Melber and the fake Ari Melber. So, Ari, do you have the cojones to join us here at the War Room? 1 hour, unedited, mano a mano. No tricks, no chicanery like you see at MSNBC. A tag team match, Roger Stone and Tyler Nixon versus you and that octogenarian clown, Nick Ackerman. Bring it on, Ari. When are you coming?
Well, I think Ari is too much of a coward and a fraud to face you here on the War Room, where there is no censorship and there are no holds barred. But just real quick, let's remember who Michael Isikoff is. This is the same guy who spiked the Monica Lewinsky story, had it and spiked it. And this is the same guy whose story on the Russian dossier was used to get a FISA warrant. So Isikoff has deep state fingerprints all over him as well. Tyler Nixon, thank you for joining us. Roger Stone, great stuff as usual. For Tyler, for Roger, that does it for them today. When we come back, Lucian Wintrich of the Gateway Pundit will join me. I'm Owen Schroyer. This is The War Room. Don't go anywhere.
Infowars.com/
The American way of life is under attack. This
This is The War Room with Owen Schroyer.
Watch the live stream
right now at Infowars.com/show.
So Donald Trump spoke, President Donald Trump spoke yesterday honoring fallen police officers. Again, he spoke for like 40 minutes, just unscripted, knocked it out of the park. Certain parts you may have agreed with and disagreed with. But there was a powerful moment where he brought the mother of a slain officer, Mitosa, I think was the name. I'm sorry if I'm not saying that right. Put this image full screen. Now, this is an amazing, powerful image, and there were multiple images like this from President Trump's speech yesterday. You can see the woman there holding President Trump like he's her rock, he's her foundation, as she struggles through the loss of her family from violence against police, and yet an amazing, powerful image like this that could unite America and bring us together does not go viral on Twitter, does not get a lead story on Twitter, does not get mentioned on the main stories on Twitter. You get nothing. No liberals celebrating this. Nothing. And it's just sad because this is the kind of stuff that they want censored on Twitter and on Facebook. Think about that. So Spike Lee, a race baiter, a divider, gets all the attention, even from Drudge. I was really upset about Drudge doing this yesterday. Spike Lee gets more attention, even from Drudge, than President Trump gets for this unifying moment right here with the mother of a slain officer. Holding him, you can tell, like he is her rock in this moment of grief. Like, thank God President Trump was there for me in my moment of grief. Does that go viral? Does that get the Twitter mention? Does that get the lead hashtag? Does this image make Drudge? Does this image get shown on media, television all day? No. Sad that this is the type of stuff they want censored from your view, from your worldview, from your perspective, in order to keep you divided and to keep America down. Really sad. Another example is this clip. This is a governor candidate in Georgia, Michael Williams, who is touring his sanctuary cities with a deportation bus. Check out this ad.
Hi, I'm Michael Williams, and boy, do we have some exciting news to you. We have our bus tour ready to go, but it's not going to be one of those pansy political bus tours. We've got the deportation bus. That's right, you heard me. The Michael Williams Deportation Bus. If you want to find out where we're coming, go to deportationbus.com. We're going to implement my 287G deportation plan that's going to fill this bus with illegals to send them back to where they came from. We're not just going to track them and watch them roam around our state. We're going to put them on this bus and send them home. Go to deportationbus.com and find out where we're going to be. See you there.
Now, see, I love this. Because it's original, it's new, it slaps the PC culture in the face. We need more of this. Now, you might think his message is a little brash and maybe too much, but you know what? Screw you. This is what we need more of. We need more of anti-PC culture. We need more realness. We need more frankness. We need more honesty. We need more putting it all out on the table. That's what we need more of. So you may not like that. You may not like the ad. You may not agree with him. But damn it, I give him credit because he puts it all on the line. And that's what we need more of in this country. And people are starting to understand it. People are starting to see that that's what you need to do. That's how Trump won. So I salute him. Oh, but don't worry. Facebook is going to ban that ad. Twitter's banning that ad. YouTube wants to ban that ad. So they don't want that ad out there. You see, again, they're trying to control your worldview. These people want to control your mind. Not us at Infowars.com. We want you to think for yourself.
The first duty of government is to protect our citizens, and the men and women of DHS are on the front lines of this incredible heroic fight. That is why we are calling on Congress to secure our borders, support our border agents, stop sanctuary cities, and shut down policies that release violent criminals back into our communities. We don't want it any longer. We've had it. Enough is enough.
That is President Trump yesterday at the annual, I forget what the name of it is, Honoring Police, the 37th annual. And there he is talking about securing our borders, doing something about the wide open borders. And Lucian Wintrich from the Gateway Pundit is my next guest. I was actually unaware of this, but Lucian, you are actually working on a film right now with some help from Ann Coulter that is addressing that same issue, which is the issue of open borders, wide open borders, and what that does to our culture, what that does to our society. Tell us about this film and about the main issues to you.
Well, I mean, obviously, we are going through an immigration crisis right now that has to be quickly corrected. And thank God we do have President Trump in office. Some of his actions do seem to be stagnating. It's a crisis. It's an issue that needs to be addressed immediately. And I've been personally watching and listening to a lot of what the left is doing. And, you know, I was sort of inspired to do this film. It's an experimental film. I was inspired after hearing about an overweight, genderqueer Indian man who spoke, very hairy, who spoke at University of Colorado Boulder, who did an interpretive dance while reading off a poem about how America is a terrible place, white people are the worst. And I vehemently disagreed with the message. I thought it was misguided, of course. But I loved this new format where people are getting into the arts to deliver their message. And I had the idea to create an experimental film, if that's the best delivery, to teach people about what's actually going on with our borders and the crisis that we're facing. I mean, do you realize for every illegal right now, we're spending $7,500 in U.S. taxpayer money.
Those numbers were actually crunched by multiple news organizations where they said, hey, look, we can pay for the border wall by just stopping funding all the illegal immigration that comes here. We'll have millions and millions of dollars available to fund the border wall. So those issues kind of tie together there. But it goes beyond that. This is like, and I want to get to your point, too, about creating art now to try to battle them on that. Platform of art, which I think is a new thing that conservatives, you know, right wingers, Trump supporters are starting to get and engage in.
So he's brilliant. We have some brilliant people.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ben Garrison. I'm working with a guy right now and there's actually another guy too. I need to get him in touch. There's so much going on behind the scenes to create music as well, to kind of put music out there that can do this as well. But for you,
Kanye.
I'm not working with Kanye, not quite yet. He's his dragon energy is a little too busy right now, working on his own album, which he's putting out little snippets of here and there. But the border issue again, this is like common sense. Like, why are we even having this debate? Why we can't have a border? I don't understand. We're not allowed to have a border. Do we even have a country? It's like, how does this get lost in translation where a border is now considered racist or something?
I mean, what's wild to me is, you know, the people who are saying open borders for Israel, the vast majority of pragmatic people in America and in other Western cultures, they'll say, okay, open borders for racists. Or for Israel, that's a racist statement. And yet, a lot of the same people will say, okay, open borders for the U.S., which the left is pushing, is also racist. I don't understand. There's a lot of discontinuity there. And if quite honestly, if we're just, because I'm a very sort of fiscally minded person, if we're just looking at the tax burden, it's insane. So even just the seven, which is a conservative estimate, the $7,500 per illegal, very conservative estimate. That's not taking into account the between 30,000 and 60,000 a year they cost us taking up spaces in our terrible prison system here. Again, per illegal in our prison system, so they have the luxury of being an.
But
American
here's the crazy
citizen.
Thing, though. But here's the crazy thing: you can use the financial arguments here to make your point, to state your side of the cause. But I'm just wondering if it resonates with Democrats, because think about it. Democrats right now are campaigning on anti-tax cuts. Democrats are literally campaigning on not cutting your taxes. So this is an entire political party that is essentially saying more taxes, and they think that that's somehow going to win them more votes. We'll see if that translates. I doubt it. But I mean, it's like, do you ever think about that? Like, okay, here I am using a financial argument that will make sense to the people that already understand it. But does the left even get this? It sounds like the left wants more taxes, or at least that's what the Democrats are saying. So it's like, I just sit here and I look at this and I just look for common sense. I struggle to find it sometimes.
You know, I know this would never happen, but I would love separate taxation. If you're a leftist and, you know, you want the illegals here because, you know, you want to turn them into citizens, which, again, that's why the Dreamer program, a lot of these other programs were created to turn them into citizens for the votes. Because a lot of these people coming across the border, they vote very tribalistically, predictably Democrat. They love big government. They vote overwhelmingly. My God, it's well over 80%. Oh, very overwhelmingly in favor of big government and the left. And so you know what? The people who want those votes, the people who want to take care of these people who don't really contribute to American society, who take jobs away from, I mean, one of the biggest.
But Lucian, this is the free market. No. See, this is the beauty of the free market. We don't need to legislate that stuff into existence. If they want to pay more and bring more people in here that they view as refugees or, you know, disenfranchised or whatever, they have the right to do that. They can open their homes. You know, they can open their homes. They can give exactly. money to charities. They can give money out there. So we don't have to put that stuff on the books. They have the right to do that in the free market. Oh, but they don't.
Yeah, I would love just a we just did taxes. I'm sure you did too, right?
I knocked my taxes out months ago, brother.
I would love a box that we could check off. Are you conservative or liberal? And then where we pay taxes accordingly? Because I personally don't like paying every year. I mean, I don't even want to talk about how high my taxes were.
Wait a second. Hold on a second. You're telling me you don't like paying for thousands of non-citizens to have food and shelter in this country? You're saying you don't like paying for that?
You know, I have a problem with it. I'll admit it.
You have a problem with being forced into doing that. That doesn't really sound American. You're telling me that you have a problem with paying with your taxpayers for babies to be aborted? You're telling me you have a problem with that?
It's not my favorite thing to do. You know, people will point out, oh, but you know, America is a country of immigrants. Look at the early 1900s when the Irish came, they were called, worse than the blacks. Or they'll do what the black man used to do for 10 cents for 5 cents. Right. Do you remember any of those old school headlines?
Or let's recall, how about all of the Japanese internment camps where they were tortured?
Oh, yeah.
Innocent people, by the way, innocent people. Look at this. This is insane. We're supposed to be at war with Islam ever since 9/11. We're at war with Islam, right? Well, now we just bring them in and say, we want you here. Come here. Well, wait a second. I thought Islam hated us, and that's why they brought the Twin Towers down. Where's the disconnect? You go back and you look at World War II. Look at what we did to Japanese people in America when we were at war with them, compared to look what we do to Muslim people now when we're apparently at war with them, but maybe we're not. It just shows you how the whole thing is convoluted and the whole thing is so confused and muddled. It's like Trump said, can we just figure out what the hell is going on before we implement a policy? Can we just figure out what the hell is going on here? No, we're not allowed to, because the Democrats virtue signal all day long and cry racist bigot. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Thank you.
with Lucian Wintrich of the Gateway Pundit about the open border policy brought in by the Democrats here in America and the issues with it, which are mostly based in common sense. Well, if you don't have a border, do you really have a country? Look at what open borders have done to Europe and the clash of civilizations out there. And, you know, Lucian, this is the same group of people that claim essentially, I mean, if you want to put a paint a picture about what they're claiming, the left still is under the presumption that black people and white people in America don't get along. So the left still believes that black people and white people don't get along and there's race problems there. Yet they want to bring more races into the country and essentially cause more chaos. Now, I'm not saying black and white people don't get along. I think for the most part, people in this country aren't racist and they'll get along with anybody. But this is what the left believes. So if the left believes that there is still a class of cultures and civilizations between white and black people, that they're trying to figure out how to figure that out, how to solve that issue, why would they want to bring in more people to have a wider clash of civilization that would just lead to larger issues? I mean, it's like they don't have a critical thinking process.
Well, you know, it is so obviously for the votes, and they're not even bothering to assimilate a lot of these people. I mean, you know, Somalian immigrants also insane crime rate. And these are people, I read about Somalian immigrants in Minnesota as one example, started child prostitution rings, major drug traffickers. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to Minnesota, but it used to be this humorously Nordic settled state, right? And then all of a sudden, there are Somalis coming in, grabbing young girls, selling them to largely also other Somalis. It's presenting a terrible, terrible problem across the board. And just to comment on the whole race relations thing, that whole argument, I believe it was, I sort of remember when the New York Times started it, I want to say 6 years ago, when all of the sudden America, this beautiful melting pot, was sort of reformulated as the most racially tense place in the entire world. Nowhere else does every single race hate each other as much as they do in America, which was nonsense. But they kept pushing that narrative. And then BuzzFeed, Huffington Post, Salon, of course, publications, The Root, the publications were started just to push that narrative. And what scares me is it might start becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, where I will say a lot of more minorities in America start hating white people because they buy into this narrative. If you grow up reading these nonsensical propagandistic articles saying that, you know, white people want you dead, white people establish the police force, the government to kill you, and you buy into that, that creates an actual stigma and an actual cultural problem.
Well, and I just want to say, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. I just kind of want to change the terminology a bit from buying into it, where it's not even necessarily that they're buying into it. It's that they're being force-fed it, and they don't know any different. So you go back and you look at a famous Hitler quote. I may be misquoting it, but I'm paraphrasing. Give me the youth of the nation, and I'll rule that nation in 7 years. Okay, well, then you have Eric Holder go out and say, we need to really brainwash children. We need to really brainwash people every day in the schools to think differently about guns. So they're taking that Hitlerian concept of brainwashing the youth, and they're putting it into practice. They're putting it into practice about hating white people.
And how did Hitler take power? What was one of the first things he ran on, right? Separating Germans from the Jews. He said, the Jews are oppressing us. The Jews are our society would be functioning better if it weren't for this race or class of people. Well, socialism does class of people. Sort of the upper class needs to be taken out. It's leftist dogma. It's leftist dogma being disguised as propaganda, and it's humorously fascist and transparent. And it needs to be. I mean, you fight against it. We all need to keep fighting. I fight against it.
But no, but that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. You go to a college campus. I go to a college campus, and they're just so brainwashed that they don't even hear your point. They don't even listen to anybody else because this is what they've been taught in the public schools since they were born. That's the problem. This is literal brainwashing brought on from the youth that they're now trying to cement into social media by censoring any outlets that go against the public school brainwashing. So, but here's the kind of the silver lining to this. Defiance is one of the strongest human characteristics. As soon as they really bring this out, it's gonna spark a new counterculture, a new defiance in the youth, I believe, just against the whole political correctness, against the whole white versus black, you know, every race into different sects of society. I think it's going to end up bringing people together unless they have their full-on censorship, which is what they really want.
I mean, I fully agree with you there. There's only so much of this that I think people can take. And I think right now we're seeing younger generations waking up to this and reading, having their own, obviously, like personal experiences interacting in the world, but reading these headlines that say, oh, well, a young black kid, oh, you're being attacked every day. And he's going home. I wasn't attacked. What's going on? And then young white children reading these, oh, white people are terrible, and saying, you know, I watch uplifting children's television. I don't feel like I'm really oppressing everybody. I value myself. And younger people, I mean, that's why across the races and everything else, younger people in general are embracing conservatism and libertarianism.
Almost, well, and it's just like, and you look at people like Spike Lee, you look at these people and you just say, look, what you're doing, do you think you're helping race relations or hurting race relations?
Did you cover the Spike Lee?
I'm saying. It's like, does Spike Lee think he's helping or hurting race relations? I think he'd admit he's hurting it. Do you think you're empowering? You're not empowering people when you say this stuff. You're hindering them.
Say the president's name. That was part of this like grandstanding statement. The man in the White House. I won't even mention this man's name. And then he went into this tirade wearing this weird hat that said black.
Well, look, it all just adds to the divide. And that's the problem. And I think I may be forced to talk more about this with Brandon Tatum. I'm sick of talking about it, but it has to be addressed. Lucian Wintrous, thanks for joining. Hey, you've got that new film that you're bringing out. What is the name of that film?
It is Perils of an Open Border. Do we have a clip?
Yeah, unfortunately, we're out of time. We're just going to roll some of the B-roll here. But this is some of the clips from Luchin's film that he's working on, The Perils of an Open Border. Follow him on Twitter for updates on that, at Lucian Wintrous. Of course, his work at thegatewaypundit.com, as always. Thanks for joining us, Lucian.
Thank you, Owen.
All right, so there he goes. In the meantime, before we go to break, I have to remind you about InfoWarsStore.com. While we're under the onslaught of censorship, now is the time to share and spread the links before we're totally banned on Facebook and Twitter. Before they totally ban us, before they totally censor our links, share our links, share our live streams, tell family and friends about us. And while you're doing that, go to InfoWarsStore.com. Take advantage of some of the specials, including 25% off Survival Shield X2, limited time offer. We'll be right back with Brandon Tatum.
Infowars.com/show. Trigger warning. This broadcast contains subject matter that may offend liberal snowflakes. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer. Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
All right, so here's the deal. Earlier this week, I talked about how I'm sick of having the conversation about race relations because I think it just demeans race relations. I think it adds fuel to the fire that there is a problem when 95% of people get along with everybody. Doesn't matter. They don't care what your skin color is. They just get along with you because you're fellow humans. And so I was like, I just don't want to talk about it. Every time I talk about it, I look back and I'm like, oh, just don't touch it. Just don't even mention it. You're just adding to the problem. So just don't talk about it. And then there's just more attacks on white people, more attacks on black people, more attacks on the, you know, racially divided people. Oh, it's all bad. And then Spike Lee has his new film that he blames Trump everything bad, and then it gets headlined on Drudge, and then I've got reporters saying white people are the problem, and it's just like, okay, I mean, it's just a natural instinct to want to defend myself here, and then you find out most of the attacks, I mean, Spike Lee is one individual, most of the attacks on white people are from other white people. And so then it's just like, okay, do I even engage in the mental illness of these racial divisions and these guidelines that are being created for black and white people? Now, my next guest is Brandon Tatum. And here's the deal. Look, I mean, it's like, do I have to bring on a black guy to talk about race relations? Is that what I have to do now? And it's like, you know what? I don't even want to do that. I just think it adds to the problem when we talk about it. So I'm just going to say, Brandon, if you want to talk about that, go ahead and bring it up and we'll discuss it. But I want to just, my question is, do you think that having the conversation is actually helping or hindering things, at least in the context that it's being presented to us now?
Well, I think, to be honest, man, in 2018, I think we need to stop having conversations, start making some actions happen, you know, because I feel like the conversation in a lot of these cases are one-sided. I think that everybody in this race war that's going on, they want to just blame white people and make it a one-sided issue. I think that if people honestly think that there's things that need to be corrected in this country, then they need to, you know, put the big boy pants on and make it happen. If you don't like the police, become a police officer. If you don't like the politicians, then run for office. Interject yourself into the conversation with some physical action and not just have a conversation that leads to no end.
So I agree with you, and I think we're starting to see some of that actually, but again, the media tries to tamper it down and then only put a magnifying glass on anything that they can cry racism about to just add fuel to all the hatred that goes around, whether it's against black people, against white people. It's all just hatred. It's all just mental illness that isn't even there. It just gets put on us by the media. So we can go back down that road, but I want to talk to you about this because, see, this is an issue to me that's just right there on its face, clearly an issue. You could virtue signal and say it affects black people more than white people because it does statistically. There's no doubt about this. The story is, and you're a former NCAA football player, and that's why I want to talk to you about this. Malik Jefferson ignored advisory committee's recommendation to return to school. This is a University of Texas linebacker. And he was told he needs to stay in school. You probably can't make it. You're just not ready. Well, he ends up getting picked by the Bengals in the third round, and now he's making millions of dollars. And when he was asked about this, he says, you know, they want to make it so we're scared to go and enter the draft because, well, potentially we could fall and maybe never make it again. But he's saying, look, why would they be telling us not to advance our career and make millions of dollars when we could do that, but instead make millions of dollars for the NCAA, make millions of dollars for the school off of our effort, and we don't get a dime? We're essentially living day to day, broke half the time. We rely on the school for everything. I mean, here's a real issue to me that you could actually take up: the NCAA totally using and abusing college athletes for millions of dollars, but I don't see anyone else ever taking this issue up.
Well, I think we have two things here. You know, when you talk about people, recommending that he stay and finish his education, I think that's a different subject matter than for them using him for his talent. I think it is in athletes' best interest to get their degree because football's shelf life is only about 3 years. And like 80%+ of NFL players end up going bankrupt anyway. So getting your education and pursuing something after football is conducive. I mean, it's something that's positive for you. But at the same time, you have to, as an individual, you have to be smart about it. You can always go back and finish school. If you have an opportunity to make millions and millions of dollars, it is in your best interest to go make millions of dollars and then go back and graduate later. I know a lot of people that have gone to the NFL and they go back and get their degree. But I do think there's a problem, and I don't know if it's intentional to some degree, but there is a problem with athletes going to college and they're literally being manipulated for their talents. But let me say this, because there's two arguments to this. When I went to school, I was on a full scholarship and they literally paid for my college, which was probably $100,000 worth of money that they invested into me with my college degree, tutors, and also the food and everything else that they provided, housing and then the checks that they gave us every month. So there is a level of, yeah, we're working for it. They are giving us a lot of stuff. But then again, you know, you have them selling apparel and making millions and millions of dollars and building multi-million dollar stadiums on the back of these athletes who, you know, for all intents and purposes, could suffer an injury that could plague them for the rest of their life and they don't really give you nothing that you can take with you. My proposal for this is that I think that when college athletes, you know, finish school, they should, or while they're playing in school, they should give them the availability to opt into a system where they can have their master's degree or doctorate degree paid for later on in life. And that will help them in their pursuit of their goals outside of NFL.
You know, I've actually never heard anyone propose that. I think that's a great proposal. And I'm glad that we're talking about this because you're putting light on this situation from having personal experience in it. I'll admit, my bias in this is that I think the NCAA is a very corrupt organization. I think Mark Emmert is a scumbag at the top. And when I hear the NCAA virtue signaling education over athletics, I just kind of laugh because most of the time that's not true. They ask way too much of these athletes. And I think that, you know, you're a better judge of this than me, but I've seen it when I went to college. A lot of the athletes don't really take school seriously because the athletics dominate so much. And then there's so much of a popularity thing there too, where they just kind of embrace it and school just kind of doesn't really seem like a big issue. So when I see NCAA committees recommending players stay in school, I just see them looking at them with dollar signs. But you're shedding another light on this issue where if you do take advantage, it does pay in the long run. But I've never heard that. I like that. Give them an opportunity afterwards to earn a master's degree or something of further advancement. Because like you said, a football career is a very short-lived career.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. The people at the top probably do not care about you. They won't. You know, butts in the seats, they want to make a lot of money. But I'm saying as a parent like me, you know, when my son gets older, I'm going to make the proper decision for him to see if it's better for him to finish his education or go to the NFL and then come back to return if that's his path. But what I was proposing is that these players are saying, we want money. We want money. You need to give us the money that you owe us. And I don't think that that's a smart thing to do. I think that they should give them more opportunities as they pursue education. They should get them, you know, the financial support to finish if they continue. If they don't continue, they drop out of school, they get nothing. And I'll say this before the break. When I was in school, football is the most important thing that you can do. You have to go to practice from 5 a.m. and you get out of practice at 6:30 p.m. and they force you to eat food after that. So if you think you're going to come to college and think that education is going to be your primary thing, you better think twice, because it doesn't matter what kind of grades you're making. That don't get you on the football field. And there were some people that may have 4.0 GPA averages. Some people had great educations. But I'm telling you what, there's a very small population of student athletes that do that. The overwhelming majority of them are coming there. They're on full scholarship to play sports. That's what it is. That's what the coaches are getting paid millions of dollars to do. And if you don't succeed in playing sports, you're going to ride the bench and be miserable.
Well, and the coaches in these universities are always the highest paid employee. I mean, what does that tell you about priorities where the coaches are always the highest paid? But no, exactly. How can you expect even, and let's be honest too here, the athletes get a lot of leeway in some of these classes to make sure that their grades make them eligible to play. But beyond that, how can you expect an athlete that works 12 hours a day to even have enough left in the tank to study? I mean, that's just a superhuman effort considering all the effort that you have to put in as a college athlete just to study at all when the night's over. It's a serious issue, but nobody wants to talk about it. We'll be right back with Brandon Tatum. Don't go anywhere.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
My guest for another segment. You can find him on Twitter at The Officer Tatum, his YouTube channel BT Cruiser 34, and he is now doing great work for Turning Point USA, so be sure to stay tuned to see what he does there. I've got a stack here of the racial division news. You've got Spike Lee invoking the Klan against Donald Trump, against the Charlottesville riots, says Trump is an MFer. Yeah, he's such an MFer. Black unemployment's at record low. And, of course, this is celebrated by the left that Spike Lee would trash the president like that, who's done more for black people than any other president in my lifetime. You've got an NAACP president who goes on social media, claims racism against him by police. Then the police put the video out and show that he is a total liar. We've got media pundit Carolyn McClanahan saying, what is wrong with white people? Well, I don't know. You're white. Why don't you just ask yourself that? She goes on to virtue signal and pretend like she knows what it's like to be a black person. You've got No Whites Allowed Day of Absence at Evergreen State College. You've got Chadwick Boseman giving the Wakanda Forever salute at Howard graduation, a made-up country, not the country of America that actually gives you prosperity. Black Yale student interrogated after a nap says it's about racism. Melina Abdullah, Cal State professor, says don't call the police on black people. So you've got this huge racial divide going on. But you know what I realized? And I don't even want to talk to you about that, Brandon, because what I want to talk about is what the positive news is. And that is that this stack of news that I just read off is actually failing. These narratives are failing. The average American doesn't buy into this. They're sick of this crap. They want to come together. And I think that you are part of this right now, and you're helping bring people to the table. So talk about the future of what you want to do to stop the narratives and the fake news and all the racial divide that's trying to be created in the media. Talk about what you're doing with Turning Point USA to try to stymie this racial divide that the liberal media is pushing on us.
So let me say this first, Owen. I really do believe that real interactions and real experience and exposure is what's causing people to not believe those articles that you just referenced. Just like we saw with the young lady who was killed, the police officer, we saw President Donald Trump at that memorial ceremony. We saw her family. We saw it all. And those people will never forget that. Those people will never forget what Donald Trump has done for them, the love and respect that he's shown them and police officers all over the country. People, when they have physical, emotional connection, they will never forget these things. That's why you see people in these situations coming around, you know, the corner and voting for Trump and being more encouraged by conservative values and ideology. And for me, the reason why I joined Turning Point USA, because I feel like they really have a mission to do something about the problem, not just talk about, you know, the struggles in the black community, not talk about the struggles from America, in America, for Americans as a whole, but they physically want to go out and inform and inspire people to do something. You know, we have a goal to hire at least 6 individuals that are going to be, we're going to start in Michigan and in Pennsylvania. We want these individuals to go out and to connect in the community and create an atmosphere where young people can have knowledge, have inspiration and revelation so that they can go out and be the change that they want to see. We want to get into at least half of the historical black colleges. And this is from the perspective of me being the director of urban engagement. So this is what we're going to do for the urban community. I mean, obviously, we're doing a lot of things for everybody else as well. But these kind of things we want to do to help the urban community. So, I mean, that's a few things. We got the summit that's coming up in the fall. We're trying to get at least 300 students, young people between the ages of 18 and 26, to come and join and be a part of the movement and inspiration. And we have a few other things that we haven't, disclosed.
It's all right. I know that you guys are working on things behind the scenes right now. You don't need to divulge those things. So you can keep those.
I'm not, but I just want people to know that.
I know. But here's the thing, though. When you talk about, you know, urban development and urban youth, you know, it's kind of like a swing state where there's actually a lot. See, because the Democrats rely on those votes and that brainwashing so much that you injecting free thoughts and ideas into their mind, it cripples their institutional hold on the urban community. So that's why it's such a key for you to do that. And unfortunately, a lot of these young people never hear a different message. So they're stuck with one message on repeat their whole lives. And just to hear something different, I think, is going to be very empowering to them and will even give them a brighter future. But when you talk about the students, I mean, when you actually deal with them, I mean, when I was working in urban development, I saw people that wanted to be empowered. I saw people that when they got a positive message, it was like so refreshing to them that it was like an enlightening moment for them that, wow, somebody says I can, somebody says I have control over my destiny. That's empowering. I like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of young people that's just looking for somebody to tell them the truth. You know, when I was growing up, I wished that I heard another side, but I didn't. I only heard one side. I don't know why conservatives weren't in my community, why they weren't at the events, why they weren't interjecting themselves into environments where I found myself being involved in, because that was a missed opportunity. I think what we see, and it's not something I read in the book, this is something that I know. Like, we need to go out and talk to these young people and give them another side. Because once they hear the truth, you cannot deny the truth. And once you hear the truth, once you understand what the left has been doing historically and what they have been doing recently, when you look in the mirror and you say, I honestly feel that I can be whatever I want to be in this country, but you have somebody over here telling you can't. But then you have other individuals over here whom you identify with telling you you can. You resonate with that. And that's going to be something that inspires you. That's what happened to me. And I know that there's a lot of young people that's seeking to understand the truth and where they stand in this country and how this country can make them or help them become better. They just listen for somebody to give them permission to think for themselves and to get out of the box. And that's exactly what we're going to do.
Well, and that's so key. And there's going to be youth that is really lost, and that it's harder to bring them to a point where they can empower themselves and believe in themselves. But most of the youth is kind of just lost in no man's land, and they're just looking for somebody to say to them the right thing that pushes them in the right direction. And once you do that, you really can change a life forever. And I think that's what you're saying. And I saw the same thing when I was working in youth development. But I want to go back to a point that you made that I think is really so key overall, where physical interaction is so important right now, and we just don't get enough of it. You've got studies right now, half the country never even goes outside. So what does that mean? They're never having physical interaction, not just with the world and the sun and the moon and grass and trees, but with other people. So it's like now you have people that only have interaction on a digital platform, and they never have the actual physical interaction of looking someone in the eye, looking someone in the soul, talking to them, getting to know them. I think that if we had more of that would solve so many issues in our culture right now, but we don't have it. We don't engage with people that think differently. We don't go out to lunch. We don't speak to people. And so we're kind of losing really on that front, where the physical interaction is almost becoming a non-existent thing. It all happens digitally, and that can easily be censored. That can easily be manipulated.
Yeah, let me make two points here. For me, what helped me understand and kind of feel where Donald Trump was coming from before I voted for him was when I went to a rally. I actually saw him. I actually heard his voice. I could just see the passion and what he was trying to convey. And then I'll tell you this, almost every single time that I've talked to somebody physically, face to face, whom disagreed with me extensively, they become a lot more accepting and they become a lot more understanding to where I'm coming from and the spirit behind what I'm doing when they actually see and talk to me. They can ask me questions and interact. People, you know, with this, these people on online, they see you and they build this image and they build this hatred and misunderstanding for against you. And then they can never get over that. So my goal, like I said, I spoke at Texas State University, which was a great thing. We invited Black Lives Matter, but they were too afraid to show up and actually have a conversation. But what we want to do is to get to these universities all around the country, not just universities, but get in these communities and talk to people on the street, physically, hand-to-hand, talking to people, and so that they can see and they can feel the energy and passion behind what we're trying to do. And then once they do that, I think that they will be more open. They don't have to agree with everything, but they'll be more open to being receptive to what we're trying to do and see how we can mesh together to make this country great again.
Well, and they realize that whatever they believed about you previously or whatever was said about you online is not true. And it's actually funny you mentioned Texas State. I was down at Texas State and I was bullhorning the paper over a racist article they put out. And I had, you know, black people come up to me and I could tell that they were really angry and they thought I was the bad guy. And then we talked for a couple minutes and they were like, hey, you know what? You're actually all right. You know what? I was wrong. You're actually an okay guy. We might disagree, but you know what? We actually can get along. We actually are fellow brothers here. So that is so key. Physical interaction, talking to people, coming together, even if you have disagreements, we need more of that. Brandon Tatum, thanks so much for joining us. Check out his YouTube channel, BTCruiser34. Find him on Twitter at TheOfficerTatum.
The War Room. Infowars.com/. Warning, this broadcast contains subject matter that might trigger liberal snowflakes. It's the War Room
with Owen Schroeder. Troyer.
Watch the live stream at Infowars.com/show.
All right, now we have been bringing this to your attention for months now, maybe even years when I first covered it for InfoWars. I don't remember the first time, but it's technology that allows you to dub a face and a voice over the real face and the voice, where you can take something Donald Trump said or Obama said or anybody said, and then you can actually, with this new technology, change what they say and have it look real. Guys, I'm sure you could pull some B-roll up on YouTube of this. Maybe it's still in the system. But you know what? Hold off on that, because let's actually go to Marco Rubio, who is actually now addressing this, and other media outlets are addressing it. So just another example of InfoWars being next year's news today. No surprise there. Of course, our story about arming the Syrian rebels, Fox News decides to cover that today. We covered that years ago. But regardless, here's Marco Rubio talking to you about fake videos posing a major threat to our democracy.
I think you can only imagine what a nation state could do with that technology, particularly to our politics. If we could imagine for a moment a foreign intelligence agency could use deep fakes to produce a fake video of an American politician using a racial epithet or taking a bribe or anything of that nature. They could use a fake video of a U.S. soldier massacring civilians overseas. They could use a fake video of a U.S. official admitting a secret plan to do some conspiracy theory of some kind. They could use a fake video of a prominent official discussing some sort of impending disaster that could sow panic. And imagine a compelling video like this produced on the eve of an election or a few days before a major public policy decision with a culture that's already in has already a kind of a built-in bias towards believing outrageous things, a media that is quick to promulgate it and spread it, and of course the social media where you can't stop its spread. I believe that this is the next wave of attacks against America and Western democracies, is the ability to produce fake videos that can only be determined to be fake after extensive analytical analysis, and by then the election's over and millions of Americans have seen an image that they want to believe anyway because of their preconceived bias against that individual. I think
That's powerful stuff from Marco Rubio. I mean, I think he nails it all right on the head there. And when you think about how gullible people are, and again, because of people's biases, how easily they can be tricked by fake news that affirms their biases, confirmation bias, it really is a threat. Now, here's some of the examples right here that we've been covering for years at Infowars.com. Where this new technology, you know, it recognizes where, you know, the tracking of your mouth, the tracking of your nose, the tracking of your eyes. And then it also recognizes, hey guys, pipe that audio down. It also, unless you want to pipe it up when they have the Bush thing on here, because I think President Bush is in this video towards the end. And so then they can reenact it. Yeah, here's him doing Putin. And this is actually older versions of this technology. This technology has probably been mastered a lot better than what you're seeing right here. But obviously, still, you can see what kind of a threat this could pose to news, to reality, to fake news. Here's Obama. Now, you might think this is actually Obama. Do we have the audio for this, guys, by any chance? So you would think that this is Obama, maybe, just watching this in the raw and listening to this in the raw. You wouldn't even realize that this is actually not Obama. This is actually a fake video of Obama being voiced by Jordan Peele, I think is the guy's name. And he even does it. And he's like, yeah, this is dangerous. This is a threat. So again, it seems like everybody kind of agrees that this could be used. So this could be something we could all come together on. Yeah, there it is right there. Good job finding that crew.
Even if they would never say those things.
Yeah. Pop the music down. Let's just let this go real quick. Let this go.
For instance, they could have me say things like, I don't know, Killmonger was right, or Ben Carson is in the sunken place, or...
Okay, so there you go. There's just an example of what could be with these fake videos and this new technology. And you know, you've already seen the fake news. They'll lie to get us into war. You don't think they'd use this technology? Come on. We'll be right back. Jake Lloyd joins me in studio now, and it's great to be able to get other minds to come talk about some of these news stories, some of these ideas other than just myself, and it's great to have them in studio. Jake Lloyd, one of our new reporters, editors, cameramen here. We're trying to hire more crew right now so we can do more of this, have different personalities. Maybe you don't like me and you like Jake's approach better. So we're trying to hire more people, get more crew, expand our broadcast, expand our reach, and it's all possible with your support at InfoWarsStore.com. Now, I was having a laugh to this about this to myself earlier today. I guess that makes me crazy, but that's fine. We could literally fund our entire operation selling toothpaste. Think about that. We could fund the entire InfoWar on toothpaste alone. If everybody that listened to the Real News with David Knight this morning, the Alex Jones Show in the afternoon, and the War Room with myself and Roger Stone, if everybody that listened today went to InfoWarsStore.com and bought a bottle of Super Blue toothpaste at 50% off, even at half off, if everyone went to InfoWarsStore.com today and bought a bottle of Super Blue fluoride-free toothpaste, we could fund our entire operation. That is incredible. Think about that. Think about the entire InfoWars production being run off of toothpaste sales. That's what we could do. That's the power of InfoWarsStore.com. So if you want to beat the censorship, fund our operation. We promise to expand, and we promise to do everything to fight back against the attack on free speech. And it's not just the great toothpaste. Other great specials, 50% off bodies. This product is unbelievable. I mean, honestly, we launched this product like right at the perfect time for me, where I'm kind of getting older now. And if I play ball for 2 hours the next day, my knees hurt, my body aches. Well, I balled for 2 hours last night, took the bodies before bed. No soreness today, no achiness today. That is all because of the bodies. So incredible products at InfoWarsStore.com. The bodies is also 50% off. So check it all out and support us at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, Jake. So you come in studio as the news goes down the pipeline that, that Giuliani says Mueller can't indict the president. Well, we all already kind of knew that, and I guess Giuliani just kind of pushes it out there to fight back against the notion that Mueller is somehow above Trump.
And well, apparently it goes deeper than that. I thought, you know, I see Giuliani says this, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, of course he's going to say this, but apparently Giuliani was told by the Mueller legal team that the special counsel has said, now we've concluded that we cannot indict a special counsel. So apparently it's Mueller's own team saying this. Now, I didn't even get a chance to read very far into this. I was listening to this clip. I think it was this clip as I was coming in here. So I only got about halfway through it. So I'm not even sure of all the details myself, but I was just incredibly surprised to see that it's Mueller's team that's actually saying this, saying, hey, we can't actually indict a sitting president.
Yeah. So then you have to wonder, as the left is relying on Mueller to do just that.
Right.
Where do they go from here?
Where do they go? And I saw part of what the reason that this came to my attention, I was scrolling through Twitter, just seeing what the new news was. And I saw that Jack Posobiec actually tweeted something out. Somebody challenged him a couple weeks ago. They said, hey, Jack, I want to bet you that Trump will be indicted by the end of this year. If I'm wrong, then I'll buy you a steak dinner. If you're wrong, then you buy me a steak. And then this news comes down the pipeline and Jack tweets at him. He goes, hey, I'll take that steak dinner now. And the guy blocks him immediately.
Oh, so, well, I would have at least taken the classy way out and I would have said, well, I'm still going to wait a year and I'll save up.
Exactly. So anyways, that's how I found out about it. So it's very surprising that the Mueller, I don't know if it's that surprising that the Mueller team is coming out and saying it, but I think it's definitely a shock to the left, because if you look at Trump's tweets, if you look at Don Jr.'s tweets, anybody really, they think that we're all going to jail. You know,
no, they really do.
I've gotten stuff before. I've gotten stuff, just me, little old Jake Lloyd at Infowars.com. I get stuff. They're like, oh yeah, well, as soon as you get found out, you'll be in handcuffs with Trump and your boys.
We'll get you, Jake.
We'll get you. Mueller's going to come down hard on you.
Dirty Russian.
And it's like, this is your hope. This is Mueller. And now Mueller goes, oh, no, we can't indict the president. We can't do it. So what are they going to do now? I don't know.
Well, he'll try to indict anyone and everyone. Of course, the irony is that he indicts the Russians. He indicts the Russian entities. The mm-hmm. left celebrates. They have parties over it. They think this is it. The Russians
we got him.
The Russians actually show up in court, and then nobody shows up. Mueller exactly. doesn't show up. Exactly. CNN doesn't show up. MSNBC doesn't show up. ABC. No one shows up except the Russians.
In the Russians, I don't think they were even in the country at the time.
No, they
were
had
indicted.
To come in.
They came in. They're like, yeah, this. We know this is BS. Yeah. We know that this is nonsense. Yeah,
they didn't even get try extradited.
Me. They're like, try me. We will willingly come in. We'll come to the trial. And Mueller was like, I'll be right back. I got to go do some paperwork.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Mr. Mueller, we the Russians that you indicted, we demand discovery, too. So, sorry. Ooh, I'll be right back.
I wonder if Mueller ever turned over that exculpatory evidence to the court.
Not yet. Not yet. So does that story develop? Or, I mean,
if they applied the same logic to Mueller that they applied to Trump, because they're like, oh, he hasn't revealed his tax returns. He hasn't revealed this connection or that connection. So he's clearly guilty. Well, if Mueller hasn't revealed the exculpatory evidence yet, then clearly he has none, right?
Wait a minute. What about obstruction of justice? How about obstruction of justice?
Oh, well, that doesn't exist anymore. We actually. Yeah,
that's true. No, so as soon as Mueller says no obstruction of justice, then there can be no obstruction
of justice.
Said the God Mueller.
Exactly.
But that, I mean, logically, if you think about it, if Mueller doesn't want to provide discovery and show up in court, I mean, in any other instance, they would be looking at that as obstruction of justice.
Exactly. And these people are so insane. It's going to get to the point because we have the congressional committees and stuff saying, yeah, we have not found any evidence of anything going on, any foul play. They're recommending that the Mueller investigation come to a close. So what are the liberals going to do when Mueller actually goes, yep, case closed. We weren't able to find everything or find anything. We turned over
By the way, Flynn gets a pardon. Manafort gets a pardon.
Exactly.
Stone gets a pardon.
Exactly. Like, where are they going to go now? They're going to say, oh, this was, Mueller was pressured by Trump. Or they're going to say, oh, he's part of the establishment, too, that favors Trump. Same thing they did with Comey. Whenever Comey clearly let Hillary Clinton get off with a bunch of stuff. They're like, oh, he opened the case just so she'd lose the election. Like, no.
Well, yeah, one day they love Comey. The next day they hate him.
Exactly.
It just depends.
It's going to be the exact same thing with
Mueller.
They
put their toe in the water, and then they decide, is it hot or cold?
Yeah, basically. Exactly.
All right, well, in the next segment, we're going to get into some liberal madness. We'll do a laughing at liberals. But staying on this topic, you know, they always demand all of Trump's tax returns. They basically want to see Trump naked. They'd like to see Trump naked and have access to all of his everything he's ever done. And that's the only way they could ever tell you whether he's clean or not. But then you got this whole Stormy Daniels thing and everything that comes out about the lawyer. Now, look at this headline in Hollywood Reporter. This is one of the funniest things. Is Stormy Daniels getting her money's worth from attorney Michael Avenatti? Okay, Stormy Daniels received almost $200 million in advertising because of all the interviews that have been going on television news. And then Newsbusters has the story. Michael Avenatti interviewed 147 times on television in 10 weeks. So how is $2 million in free marketing not getting your money's worth for Stormy Daniels, I would ask the Hollywood Reporter.
Did you see, on that note, the Daily Caller's article where they talked to Don Lemon's boyfriend?
No.
I didn't even know that Don Lemon had a boyfriend. I thought those were all jokes.
Oh, I did see that. And he was all triggered. He was like, oh, don't comment on how Don Lemon reports a story.
Yeah, and he was like that at first. And then he actually switched and he was like giving hints, like trying to show that he has this inside information. Like they're asking, why would Avenatti be on all these shows and why did Don Lemon throw him a softball? And he's like, well, think about it. You know, isn't Trump friends with Hannity? And the Daily Caller is like, yeah, they're personal friends. And then the boyfriend's like, exactly, exactly. So he's basically insinuating
that
Avenatti is friends with all these media figures, and that's why they throw him softballs.
Well, it would make sense.
It would make total sense.
Oh, my gosh. But it doesn't even matter. It's a porn star who may or may not have had sexual relations with Donald Trump years ago. And this is the biggest thing in the media on the left right now. So you know what? I actually just keep doing that. Just keep bringing Avenatti on. Keep talking about Stormy Daniels. You're really doing yourselves a favor. Just keep it up, Don Lemon.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show. We'll be right back.
It's Laughing at Liberals with Jake Lloyd here in the war room. Let's just get right into this. Patrick Leahy, this guy, he says, well, no, he laughs at Scott Pruitt, who has been threatened. Videos even caught on camera of him being threatened or being stalked. Scott Pruitt claims that he has to fly first class now because of threats to his life. And he says this on Capitol Hill. And then the Democrat Senator Patrick Leahy has the nerve to laugh at him, scoff at death threats to him, and say, nobody even knows who you are. Can you believe the nerve?
Nobody even knows who Scott Pruitt is?
That's what Democrat Patrick Leahy said.
The Democratic base would love to see. And I'm not even, the scary thing is,
they're the ones that made him famous.
Exactly. They're the ones that made him famous. And these people would love to see him literally crucified on national TV.
They'd celebrate it, probably.
I mean, literally nailed to a cross. They would enjoy it.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah. This guy wants to poison the rivers. Let's show him who's in charge.
He wants to destroy the planet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He doesn't drive a Prius.
He doesn't want the EPA to rule the world.
Ugh. Mr. Leahy.
So apparently Democrat Senator Patrick Leahy thinks it's funny if you get death threats and then your lifestyle has to change.
Oh man.
I mean, we're laughing about this, but this is a serious thing, man. I mean, this is a serious thing. You think it's a joke that Alex Jones has to walk around carrying all day because of the death threats he gets? You think it's a joke that I sleep with a shotgun under my bed because liberals want to dox me? You think that's funny, Patrick Leahy? How about you put your personal information out there? How about you let people know where you live and have your phone number and your parents' addresses, Patrick Leahy, you Democrat dirtbag? You think it'd be funny then?
I mean, it's gotten to the point where it's not unreasonable whenever we go out and we shoot a report on the street to have the reporter and the cameraman and then somebody there to like just look around.
No, we have to.
It's not even just reasonable. It's necessary because, you know, you go out and if you're looking around while we're out there, you see people like whispering to their friends and like texting people.
No, Jake, if you get cold clocked covering an event, I think that's funny.
Nah, it's a coincidence. It's a funny coincidence.
Yeah, it's just funny.
A happy coincidence.
I'd laugh.
Oh, look at that guy.
I'll be reporting and Jake Lloyd will be shooting and I'll see him get knocked out cold from a tolerant liberal from behind. I'll just laugh at you. I'll laugh.
Scream world star.
Yeah.
Yeah. While you film it. Yeah, exactly.
No, that's what the Democrats would do, though.
Yeah.
All right, let's move
Patrick
on.
Patrick Leahy would do that.
We're laughing at liberals here. This is from Time. Lisa Feldman Barrett says, men need to stop relying on nonverbal consent. So from now on, and of course she targets Republicans in here, specifically Governor of Missouri Eric Greitens, who has all these charges against him, but he's not backing down. To me, you back down when you're guilty. You stand up when you're not guilty. Right. I mean, that would be my approach. But now, I mean, you know what? I think Time is right. You know, if I'm on a date with a woman and you know what, maybe things are getting, you know, a little hot and heavy and maybe I go in for a peck on the cheek. I want to be, you know, politically correct. I'll ask for permission first. Don't you think that's the way to go?
I think that's probably the appropriate way to handle the situation. Okay. You don't want to, you know, accidentally end up in jail for a kiss on the cheek. So it's probably best to make yourself look like an awkward doofus and just say, hey,
ask.
Can I kiss you on the cheek? I think that's the proper way to do it.
No, I think you're right. And
when a man and his wife.
Oh, it's even worse then.
It's even worse. You have to get written consent. You have to get a signed form.
Mm, you might
check boxes and everything.
I might actually, you know what? We should do this at Infowars.com. Let's put out like a little like checklist and you put it in your wallet. Yeah. And whenever you're with a woman, you have all, you know, other, you know, kissing, you know, whatever, making out, French kiss, and you have all the, you say, can you consent? Can you consent? Check off the boxes that you'll consent.
Of what you're okay with.
Yeah. And then sign on the dotted line.
Multi-level consent form.
And then also I need you to take a picture with it too for documentation. So I'll have a whole file of defense.
So you can get the timestamp and so it's not forged.
Not to protect me against false accusations. Because that never happens.
That never happens.
No.
That literally never happens.
You'd be a misogynist to even think that would ever happen. But it's true. You need to ask a woman. Even if you just want to look at her or talk.
You don't look at her. That's the thing.
Oh.
You just don't look at her.
Oh, thank you for telling me that. I could have gotten in big trouble
If she lets you kiss her on the cheek, you don't look at her.
I think it should go both ways. If a woman wants to try to kiss me or dance with me or something, you better ask me.
You better ask. You better get permission.
I mean, you know, if you know, if some woman thinks that she can just come up to me and kiss me like Katy Perry did on the America's Got Talent, I'll sue your ass.
I mean, I'm not an object. I'm not just
don't objectify
some plaything that you can come up and kiss whenever you want.
Yeah, okay? So men and women need to start, hey, can we kiss? Are you okay with that? Well, I don't know. I have some reservations here. Oh. So we all need to be like dandies, like, oh my gosh, oh, I'm afraid. Because you know what? You know what it is, though? Women really hate men that take control. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, women really hate men that take control of the
situation.
What
they really want is a man that acts like a woman.
A soy boy.
That's what they want.
Yeah. They really want a cuck.
Yeah, exactly.
A beta male.
Mm-hmm.
That's trendy. Or what they want, Drag Queen Story Hour.
Oh, wow.
Returns to St. Louis Public Library with a flourish. I can't even, look, I don't, I'm not trying to like attack the gentlemen that dress up as drag queen alien demons, okay? Whatever, you can do that. Why are we doing this as a publicity stunt and having them read to kids now all over the country? What is up with that?
I really don't know. I really don't know why we think that this is an okay thing to do. I mean, one of my first reports, actually the first report that I did here was going to the Austin, like the hearing.
Oh yeah, you got that crazy footage.
Yeah, that was Austin insane. Had this new.
And they're like doing like some like weird dance stuff. Like what?
They think that. Like this new sex ed program, they actually have these breeding assignments for these kids, and it's like the boy in the dress or like thousand dress. I don't know. It's stuff that's like about little kids that are cross dressing. They're not even. It doesn't even say whether they're transgendered or not. They're just cross dressing kids, and it's pushing this on the children. There's
just like playing around.
There's
like,
diagrams.
You know.
There's literally diagrams of this stuff. So it's like I don't know what they're trying to accomplish, but I'm not really surprised that Drag Queens for Kids is a good thing.
This was a special event at the St. Louis Public Library for Mother's Day weekend because it's natural for your mother to be a man that dresses up like a woman.
Yeah.
Hey guys, pull up the story again just so you can get an idea because you had Maxie Glamour, Celeste Covington, and Blair Werner that were singing songs and reading to the kids because we need to normalize drag queens and cross-dressers so that children can say, hey, I can be like that when I grow up. That's really what we need.
The funny thing is they're like, this is normal, guys. This is normal. Accept it as normal. We're going to brainwash you to think that this is normal. You literally have to brainwash people from their formative mental years in order for them to believe that this is normal stuff.
Which actually goes along with the cultural norms that they're trying to fight.
Right.
By saying we're going to go as far from the cultural norms as possible, you're accepting the cultural norms.
Exactly.
Instead of just being yourself. All right, final laughing at liberals. Boy Scouts lose 425,000 boys 1 week after announcing name change. So it sounds like the liberals have now ruined the Boy Scouts too, Jake.
Wow, what a surprise. What a surprise. It's almost like when you hate the NRA all the time, the NRA skyrockets.
What will the liberals not destroy? Well, whatever we keep their hands off of.
The War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Donald J. Trump is president of the United States.
Trigger warning. This broadcast contains subject matter that might trigger liberal snowflakes. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer.
I've got some more news I need to get to, but first I want to get to some of these powerful clips. Let's start with Rand Paul addressing Gina Haspel, asking her if she knows of any CIA surveillance of Trump.
With us right now, Senator, good to see you.
Thanks, Tim.
I did catch your letter to Ms. Haspel to find out a little bit how she stands on a couple of key issues. Most people seem to think that, you know, this has to do with torture. Well, actually, your letter addresses far bigger issues. Could you explain?
Well, you know, I'm concerned that there are reports that John Brennan, the former head of the CIA under President Obama, that he was cooperating with British
criminal
intelligence to spy on the Trump campaign. This is a big deal. Now, some are saying, oh,
John Brennan's a criminal.
It's still a big deal. And there is a question. There are some accusations that it was actually ordered by President Obama's administration, either through John Brennan or others.
Pause it right there. Not just accusations, but declassified texts from Peter Strzok saying the White House wants to know everything. That's Obama. Let's go back to Rand Paul.
Acting director of the CIA. She's high enough up in the CIA. I think we should know what she knows about whether the Trump campaign was surveilled upon. We do know that John Brennan, since he's left government, has become an outspoken partisan against the president in very defamatory terms. So, yes, I'm concerned about Gina Haspel being a close acolyte of John Brennan. I'm also would like to know from her before she's appointed, if she is indeed appointed, I would like to know what does she know about the surveillance of the Trump campaign and why was the CIA involved?
Yeah, and pause right there for a second. I just want to make something clear. Rand Paul was against the nomination of Gina Haspel, I think to the bitter end, and brings up a great point here. We already know the surveillance happened. Why can't we get a comment now from Gina Haspel, who's going to be the head of the CIA? She has access to this information. Let's get some disclosure from her. So Rand Paul is really hitting the nail on the head here. Let's finish the clip.
Former Director Brenner's contempt.
I think that she is a close acolyte of John Brennan, so I think some have called her a protege. And I worry that now we've seen John Brennan's stripes. We've seen that he's a dyed-in-the-wool partisan, a hater of Donald Trump. And so I don't want people running our intelligence agencies that have an axe to grind or have some sort of partisanship lurking beneath the surface. So there's many reasons why I oppose her. Number one still is torture, that we shouldn't torture and we shouldn't reward somebody who's in charge of a torture program. Number two, we were sending people to be tortured, the CIA was, sending people to be tortured in Assad, Syria. Now we say Assad is a terrible guy because he gassed his people in all likelihood. Well, we didn't. Somebody in the CIA thought he was a great guy because he was so barbarian and would torture people. The problem is about 20% of the people that were tortured were the wrong
identity.
Right,
so he goes in, he talks about why he was against the Haspel nomination with her history of torture. And then more of an issue to me is her relationship to John Brennan, who I think's as crooked as a right angle. But now let's get to another side of the issue here where Rand Paul trying to get information from Gina Haspel on the illegal surveillance of the Trump campaign. Devin Nunes is also getting deeper into the truth, and he's now saying that Glenn Simpson, it appears that Glenn Simpson is actually trying to help in this investigation. Let's go to Devin Nunes discussing that.
You had Fusion GPS that was hired by the Democratic Party and the Clinton campaign to draw up a dossier on the president as the president was running for president.
Which was
probably fake. What happened with that is that in his testimony, he mentioned that there was a source within the campaign.
Glenn Simpson, who runs Fusion GPS.
Glenn Simpson said that in public, what was closed testimony, then it became public. Now he's confirmed that he was telling Congress the truth, which is probably a good idea. We believe he was telling the truth. And what we're trying to do is get the documents to figure out, you know, did they actually have, what methods were used to open this counterintelligence investigation?
So, if Glenn Simpson is going to cooperate with this investigation, that's going to be devastating to the Mueller probe and to the Obama administration, the DOJ and the FBI, because what's going to be revealed is what's already been revealed, that the dossier, which was concocted, a made-up story, fabricated, was then used to spy on the Trump campaign, used to get a FISA warrant, and everybody involved in that process knew that that dossier was fake news. And so for James Comey to sit here and say, well, I don't really know if it was the dossier that led to the investigation or not, he is lying through his rabbit teeth. Okay? They all knew. They all were involved in this. And like I said, and I'm going to say this, I'm going to continue to say this. In the 18th century, high treason and crimes of this magnitude would result in hanging. Okay? These people would be hanging from the highest tree outside of the courthouse. I'm not calling for that. I'm just telling you, 18th century justice, the crimes that these people committed against our republic would result in hanging. Guaranteed. Now, here we are in the 21st century, and you're apparently above the law, And you're so above the law, in fact, that you now get to appoint a special counsel to try to take out your enemies. So not only do you get to break the law wantonly and face no justice, you then get to appoint a special counsel that's above the president and above the law to try to take out your political enemies and your opponents that might want to bring justice on you. So that's where we're at now. And this is my new thing. In fact, I want to do a whole show where I just take calls on this. And in fact, I'll take a call or two in the next segment. 888-201-2244. 888-201-2244. I believe President Donald Trump goes down as one of the greatest presidents of all time. Unless some drastic change to the path that he's on happens, he's going to go down as one of the greatest of all time. The tax cuts, the borders, even the Jerusalem embassy, it's all going to go down. It's all going to be part of his sterling presidency as one of the greatest. What he did for the economy, what he did for nationalism and everything. And getting us out of the terrible Paris Climate Accord, the terrible TPP, even the Iran deal was just awful for us. There was no reason for us to even be in it. They could go on. Here's the funny thing about the Iran deal. It's just like the Paris Climate Accord. They don't need us. The only reason they need us in the Iran deal, the only reason they need us in the Paris Climate Accord is for what? Our money. That's it. That's the only reason they had us in these deals was for our money. So I'm glad we're out of them. But I'm going to take your calls, 888-201-2244, and I want to do a whole show where I just take calls on this. Even though I agree, or I believe Trump will go down as one of the greatest presidents, if not the greatest president in U.S. history, his presidency is a failure if he does not drain the swamp. If you don't see the likes of a Hillary Clinton and a James Comey getting arrested, getting locked up, or being brought in for questioning so that they can sing like a bird and out the entire criminal cabal that was behind it, the Russian dossier, the illegal spying, and then it just goes on and on and on from there. But that's where we got him dead to rights right now. If President Trump does not drain the swamp, does not have the likes of James Comey and Hillary Clinton arrested for all of their crimes, then Trump's presidency to me is a failure. Even if he and when he goes down as one of the greatest presidents of all time, to me it will be an utter failure if he does not drain the swamp and you do not see the likes of Hillary Clinton and James Comey arrested. And I will stand by that statement until Trump's presidency is over. If we do not drain the swamp, if we do not set a precedent for criminals like Hillary Clinton and James Comey, that you will be arrested, you are not above the law, then it doesn't matter. Everything else Trump does will eventually be null and void and lead to nothing. It will be 4 years or 8 years of greatness for America, but we'll go right back to crooked politicians running our lives. We'll go right back to crooked politicians being above the law. And that's what we elected Trump to stop. So if Trump does not put an end to that by making an example of Hillary Clinton and James Comey, his presidency to me is an utter failure. He's got more time to do it, but if we don't apply pressure to him, I don't think it'll get done. Your phone calls and more news on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
War Room. Infowars.com/show.
Ow! All right, welcome back. Final segment here of the War Room. I'm going to take some of your calls, but I got to press through some of this news first. Hey, look at this. The Second Amendment works. Teenage gunmen. Can you believe this? You probably haven't even heard of this. Teenage gunman 19 is brought down by armed resource officer after opening fire at his old high school. So just like what you had in Florida with Cruz, a former student, 19 years old, goes into the school to shoot it up. And what was the difference between this and Florida? The resource officer at the scene was armed and did his job. There was no stand down. So where is all the media covering this? Where is all the media crying outrage after the Florida shooting about guns being the problem? Guess what? Guns were the solution and saved lives at this Illinois school. You know why? Because there wasn't a stand down. It's just sick, guys. You know, the Florida shooting, man, you don't want to hear it, but why did they stand down and then have all the talking points ready to go attacking the NRA, attacking the Second Amendment, all the liberal-funded protests ready to go. I mean, if you don't see what happened at the Florida shooting with the stand down and then the propaganda afterwards, and then the total ignoring of the story in Illinois where the teenage gunman tried to do a Nicholas Cruz and got stopped by a good guy with a gun, well, then, unfortunately, you just don't understand anything at all. Taxpayer cash laundered through Somali daycares to fund terrorism. This is a Fox 9 story. I think that's a Minnesota outlet. I don't have time for the clip because I want to take your calls, but I'll read this. Millions of Minnesota taxpayer dollars have been funneled overseas to a Somali terror group through a network of daycare centers, according to reports based on public records and government documents. Daycare centers, mostly owned by Somalis, received millions in government subsidies meant to assist low-income families with child care expenses, but the money was instead shipped in suitcases to the Middle East, including regions of Somalia controlled by Islamic terrorist group Al-Shabaab. Now you understand why America isn't a socialist country. Now you understand why I'm against subsidies like this. If you're going to fund this stuff, it should be through the private sector, not through government. That's illegal. But not in the socialist America we live in now. All right. Syrian girl is coming on air with me tomorrow to discuss what's going on in the Gaza Strip. My goal is to also get Laura Loomer on. So we're reaching out to Laura. We've been reaching out to Laura all day today to try to get her on with Syrian girl so that we can have a debate and hear all sides of the issue tomorrow on the War Room. So hopefully we hear back from Laura and get her on. Laura, if you're listening, we're reaching out to you right now. We want to have this debate. I want to hear all sides of the issue, and I want to see if we can come to terms on things and have a real debate about this. And I'm not seeing it happen really anywhere else. So Syrian girl is on tomorrow. Hopefully we also get Laura Loomer on so that they can have that debate. But here's the story. Israel faces diplomatic fallout after dozens killed in Gaza. Okay, we talked about that. Then Hamas leader comes out and says 50 Gazans were part of their terror group. Well, you know what? I'm sorry. I don't just buy everything I'm told. Israel was behind Hamas from the beginning, so could they still be behind Hamas, and could they be lying about these deaths? Could they be lying about who was killed? Yes, absolutely they could be. Now, are they? I don't really know, but I don't just buy things as they're sold to me. I question and consider everything. But then you see this. Turkey urges Islamic world to unite against Israel. So there you go. Okay. So now the entire Islamic world is trying to unite against Israel, says Turkey's Erdogan. And you've got hate crimes being stepped up on Jewish people too, especially in New York. So there's real issues on both sides, okay? But I'm not going to sit here and draw party lines and just say one side good, one side bad. No, that's insane. Hey, be careful if you're vaping out there, not just about, you know, the studies I'm sure that will be revealed later about the chemicals you're inhaling, but an exploding vape pen kills St. Petersburg man in Florida. So watch out for your vape pen. Hope it doesn't explode. All right, let's take a phone call. Guys, please make it quick. Get your point across real quick once you get you on. I want to get all these phone calls before I got 6 minutes to do this. So you got 60 seconds and I got to drop you. Wild in Wisconsin. Go ahead.
Hi, Owen. I have a rabbit hole I'd like you to burrow into if you have a chance to read a 100-page book written by Mark Twain after meeting Nikola Tesla called The Mysterious Stranger. I think it's very important in understanding the enemy's perspective.
So Mark Twain wrote a book called what was it again?
Mysterious Stranger. It's only about 100 pages. He wasn't able to complete it, kind of in the same rubric as Kubrick.
Oh, and then a little wordplay from Wild in Wisconsin. All right, I will check that book out for sure, Wild. I have so many books I'm trying to read right now, and I barely even have the brain capacity at the end of the day to read a book. But I'm trying to do more of that. Thank you for the call, Wild. I'll check into that. Actually, a big fan of Mark Twain. Let's go to Kai in Oregon. Go ahead, Kai.
Hi, Owen. I was just calling to say that what you were saying about Comey and Clinton being arrested is like so true. We have to arrest these criminal cabals that are operating within our government, because if we don't, as soon as Trump is out of office, they're just going to put either a blue blood Republican in office who poses as some Trumpian, or they're going to put a Democrat in office, and they're just going to knock out the whole foundation of our destruction of the
And who statement. Knows who knows if there's anyone else left on earth that has the audacity of Trump, despite all the attacks on him, despite all the attacks on his family, to actually do what he did. I mean, that's the point of all this. is to intimidate anyone else from doing what Trump did again by going after all their associates, by going after their family and friends. It's all an intimidation tactic to try to get someone to try to stop someone else from doing what Trump did. And exactly, if we don't set the precedent that no one is above the law, if Trump doesn't drain the swamp, then we've accomplished nothing to me. And I'm going to continue to push that narrative every day on air here.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think that we have to get that point across, especially to leftists, because it could really change the minds of a lot of leftists if Trump were to arrest Hillary Clinton for these crimes that she's committed.
No, see, that bingo, bongo, bango, exactly. You want to shut the left up about all the fake news? Look, you know how you stop a John Kerry from going overseas and stabbing America in the back and having a secret meeting with Iranians? You put his ass in jail! Thanks for the call, Kai. Let's jump out to Florida and go to Sonny. Go ahead, Sonny. All right, we lost Sonny. Sonny, if you want to call back, sorry. Let's go to Tim in Missouri. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Owen. Destroyer, man. Real simple, dude. Real simple. You don't cut the head off a snake. You leave the head alone, and you start at the other end of it and start chewing it up real slowly. You hurt the people. Well, you stop the people from the bottom from turning into the head of the snake.
And what do you mean exactly? I understand the analogy, but apply it to some real-world situations for me.
Okay, CIA, FBI. You know, and all that stuff like that. You know, I mean, Trump's trying to drain the swamp, okay, but he's trying to do it from the top, okay? Well, pull the plug out of the bottom. Don't dip the water out of it. Pull the plug out of the bottom of it. Stop.
I see what you're saying. As long as the swamp exists, aka the FBI, the CIA, where the deep state resides, you can't drain it if it's still there.
People are going to look for cool jobs.
An interesting point, Tim. I don't necessarily fully agree with you, but I do think it is a solution. I do think that you provide a solution to the problem. Shut down the CIA. Shut down the FBI. Just shut them down. They're unelected. They're unconstitutional. And they're not helping this republic one bit. Thank you for the call, Tim. Let's squeeze in Brad from Louisiana. Go ahead, Brad.
Hey, Owen, I agree with everything your previous caller said. I agree with you. I would just want to add three words, pay-per-view. Make it available to people to see this happening.
Oh, yeah, like the old George Carlin idea, the Suicide Network, the Death Network?
Yes.
It'd be the number one rated TV show.
It'd pay for your bills.
I'm not calling for anyone to get hung. All I'm saying is the crimes committed by the Clinton crime cabal, the crimes committed by James Comey and the like would be hangable offenses of treason in the 18th century. That's all I'm saying. I think you agree, Brad.
There has to be consequences.
No, I completely agree. If Trump doesn't drain the swamp, even though he'll go down as one of the greatest presidents of all time, that's the pace he's on, it will still be a failed presidency to me if Trump does not drain the swamp. He needs to make an example of the Hillary Clintons, make an example of the Bill Clintons, make an example of the John Kerrys, the James Comeys, put their ass in jail and let anybody know from the deep state, if you want to stab this country in the back, your ass is going to be in jail and your ass is going to be grass, buddy. That does it today for the War Room. Thanks to all the callers. Great job from the crew. David Knight, back tomorrow, 8 a.m. Central. You stay classy, InfoWarriors.